Welcome to the Metropolitan Community Church of DC's discussions on reading the Bible in 90 days. Again, we are so pleased that you could continue joining us on our journey. If you would like to learn more about reading the Bible in 90 days, or learn a little bit more about our church, please visit us at mccdc.com. Our third week's readings cover the second half of Deuteronomy and the books of Joshua, Judges, Ruth, and 1 Samuel.
Let's pray. Gracious God, thank you so much for your word. Thank you so much for each and every person here. I pray, God, that our minds would be fresh and full of excitement and vigor. And I pray that your word would open itself to us as we open ourselves to one another. In your name I pray. Amen.
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 Amen. Amen.
So, how did everybody do with this week's reading?
I'm not doing so great.
Not so great?
But I do have something that's been sort of helping me, and that is that, you know, people might be interested in. If you go to Gateway Bible, or probably any number of other sites too,
right,
there's an audio. And so while I'm getting ready for work in the morning, I listen, at least, if I don't get up early enough to do all the reading. So that's been helpful.
Wonderful.
So
this week's reading covered essentially from Joshua through about the middle of 2 Samuel, and covers a whole bunch of interesting stuff just before most folks arrived or dialed in. Peter and Cassandra and Diana and I were talking about how there's really a lot of interesting stuff happening in these passages, some of the more memorable stories. So can we start with what some of the ones were that stuck out to you, stuck to your mental socks, I like to say?
This is Danita. Well, I'm going to tell you, when I got to the end, I had to keep reading because I wanted to know what was going to happen. let me turn to the end of that chapter. I won't tell anybody.
Yeah. Don't give away the plot.
Samuel?
Right.
Which one?
At the end, I'm on day... Well, I done passed today's day. But at the end of today's reading, I think it was with Saul and David, God got mad at David because David disobeyed him. And so then the reading went next to what had happened. So I won't tell you what happened.
Okay.
And it started getting good to me.
Sure.
I thought the whole Saul-David story was interesting, how they went back and forth and the things that they did.
Excuse me. This is not necessarily a good thing, but I have always wondered why we always have so many wars and things. Why, you know, if there's always something going on, fighting over land, property, whatever. And it looks like it started here because, I mean, this practically the Joshua and the Judges is nothing but war,
right,
and battles and fighting. And,
right.
And I just have trouble with God telling people to fight like that and kill each other and all that kind of stuff.
Right, and sometimes God even instructs
Joshua
to be sure you kill all the people in that village. And other times God says, no, spare them, but take their cattle and, and these other things. So,
spoils of war. Hold those back. Yeah.
And he gets mad if you don't. You know, it's okay if he told you to kill them all the first time, but if he told you not to kill them with the next battle and the next fight, and you disobeyed him,
then he gets mad.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was just going to say, I think it was in today's reading, it almost seemed like it was a culture, because with the David story...
The culture of fighting?
Like, yeah, because in the David story, it's, you know, when he sees Bathsheba, it starts out by saying, in the spring, basically, when everyone goes out to war, like, as if It was just a common thing like to happen, and every spring you win.
Okay, it's time.
It's warm. Let's go.
And that's, here the comment was the like a football game.
It's warm season.
And that's still happening today in Afghanistan, where you know the spring offensive, and that's when they come out.
The Arab Spring.
So then this is probably just something that we just is never going to end. The war thing is like.
Well, I can tell you
human nature, really, now.
We were talking about, you know, here the early Hebrews are fighting for their identity and for their survival. And I was saying earlier, I have a Israeli friend. So he's both Jewish and he's really Jewish. He's Israeli. Mm-hmm. And my Israeli friends are of the opinion that there's always been fighting, there always will be fighting, we've always had to fight for, and even today, for the creation of their country.
And the geography of that area, too, lends itself to so much in fighting, because they're really the any delta of a river is the most fertile land. Mm-hmm. And where the Nile Delta begins, those are super rich lands, easy to farm, easy to have water for your livestock, easy to have resources. So they keep making reference to the Negev, which is the barren part of the desert, Egyptian-Israeli desert. So those arid places are really hard to grow crops and really hard to. So I think there was just a lot of fighting for resources as well. So God was like, you shall prosper. Go over there and clean that up, because that's going to be yours. I want you to have that. But do it the way I say it. Mm-hmm. Very
kill all of
them. Yeah, but
kill them all.
Just one real quick thing. In Deuteronomy, which was at the very beginning of this week's reading, there's a good, in Deuteronomy 20, oh my goodness, I think I just lost it, 24, Deuteronomy 24, verse 20. When you beat the olives from your trees, do not go over the branches a second time. Leave what remains for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow.
Right.
And it kind of foreshadowed some of the hold back.
Yes.
Some things. But then at other times it was everything.
You know, kill the other. That's wonderful.
I think that I've wondered throughout all of the reading is you try to make some rhyme or reason saying that you figure out, okay, there isn't.
God takes both sides sometimes.
There just isn't.
Mm-hmm. So, Peter, that was awesome. What other passages really stuck in people's minds from this week? Yeah, Canute.
I think two encouraging passages for LGBT people like us, David and Jonathan.
Oh, yes.
You can almost read it as a love story. I mean, if you, it is more than friendship. And then Ruth and Naomi, of course.
Yeah.
And I think those are very two contrasting stories. You know, the war and bloodshed that's going on in the passages we've read is kind of something uplifting.
Yeah. You know, and to this point, I very much felt that warmth of brotherly love and friendship between Jonathan, one of Saul's sons, and David. And Jonathan is actually protecting him,
and their secret code,
and their secret code with the
if he falls before the altar,
right, with his arrows, shooting of the arrows.
Yeah, behind the stones,
And so, to this point in our reading, that was the first real kind of friendship story. There's a lot of family relationships, and father and son, and brothers. But that one sticks out to me, at least so far in our reading.
What
as
about
just,
Ruth and
okay, well, and now Ruth and Naomi.
What about, you know what I wanted to say? What is, when her sister's name was Orpha or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, if you change two of the letters, it's Oprah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought that was really funny. You know, I mean, I wondered if it was a trying to make your name or that, and they just couldn't spell it right or something.
That's what it was.
Really?
Oh, is
it really?
No, wow.
Isn't that something?
That's interesting.
When
I saw that, like, Oprah.
Yep, I did too, actually.
But I thought it was Oprah.
But they were sisters, you were saying, that weren't related. Yeah.
Well, so can we talk about Ruth and Naomi and Orpah and that whole thing that's going on? What did you think of the Book of Ruth?
Short.
Short, sweet.
I wanted more.
And did you wonder, like, what are these people doing in the middle of this story? Because
right.
It's going along, and then here's Ruth.
Well, it was more calming and less turbulent as the rest of it.
It's a nice interlude the developers
like
of the
a
Bible
break
put
in between
there.
All the fighting
okay.
and mm-hmm. chaos.
Okay.
We talked a little bit about that last week when Frank brought that up, that there was that moment where it wasn't all badness. What was the story?
Oh, the donkey.
Oh, the donkey. That's
Balaam,
it.
Balaam and the talking donkey.
Right, the talking
yeah.
donkey. Right.
I honestly,
Frank tried to
before the talking
was
trees.
Was like, we were all so serious
yeah.
about the talking donkey.
What I was going to say is, at the end, I was going to hand these out, and one of them is kind of explains why Ruth is in there, because Ruth is in Jesus's bloodline. And so, you know, what this is the early bloodline up through David, but in it includes, well, she's not listed in the Old Testament, she's listed in the New Testament, is Rahab, the prostitute, and because she supposedly married one of the men, Salmon,
mm-hmm.
Who she protected. So I'm going to pass this out at the end, but it kind of explains why some of the stories like Ruth
right.
may have been put in there to give some context to some of the
Backstory of David's bloodline. I mean, do you think, just picking up with what Joanna said, I mean, do you think that's the only the whole reason Ruth is there? Or is there another story in here? Is it just to tell the bloodline?
Well, it's a story. For me, it's a story of the strength of family and community. In a we've had a lot of stories about clans and fighting and fighting for your land and what a everyone is united in this. In the battle, and this is a story more about being united as a family and in your community in a more positive way, I guess I should say, a different sort of spin on the strength of family and community.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the story of Ruth and Naomi as anything other than the strength between, like a mother and a daughter, or a daughter-in-law and a mother-in-law.
Hmm.
I don't get the same sense from it that you get from David and
Jonathan.
Right.
Really? Okay. And so I just want to point to it's Ruth. I guess it's Ruth 1 on page, in my Bible it's 224. Ruth 1, it starts with verse 16.
Mm-hmm. 210 on ours.
Okay. So Ruth 1, verse 16, where it starts, but Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God." I mean, it's just one of the, and it continues on, but it's just one of the most loving, pleading.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just you know, my heart went out to Ruth, and so it also had me thinking about how hard it was for women. That, you know, she had to go back to her people. And she didn't want to go back to her people. They might not have been such great people. And she wanted to go with Naomi's.
Mm. Another thing that I thought that it showed me more than any other time to me in particular, that it seemed like it was, you saw the devotion and faithfulness of the people, how God rewarded them for being devoted and faithful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And rewarded them with eventually their lives turn out. And yeah, so I think this is a great sort of little vignette dropped in here between Judges and Joshua.
Mm-hmm.
Cassandra, like you said, a nice little interlude. Yeah. But I thought it was rich with sort of important stories about love and
mm-hmm.
family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Non-traditional
right.
families and cunning. And because Boaz was pretty cunning as well. So all throughout, at least all the stories, many of the stories that we've seen so far have been filled with guile and cunning of the characters. Because... let me go to the gate. Oh, well, here, this piece of land is available to you. You're the next closest relative. Oh, I'll take it. Oh, well, if you take this land, you're also going to take this woman, too, and you're going to give up your birthright. Oh, well, I'm not going to take it. So,
right. And if you had just daughters, then you didn't have any legacy.
Exactly. Exactly. And Naomi's maybe wisdom, perhaps cunning is too loaded a word, but wisdom. Oh, well, go to the threshing floor. Oh, uncover his feet, which is a euphemism for, uncover him. And when he gets cold at night, you know, he's going to wake up and say, who are you? So she set up this whole thing, and it's just, to me, a very intriguing story, a very, ooh, what's going to happen next kind of story as well.
So let me back up there. Uncover his feet is a euphemism for just uncovering him in general, or... get naked together. I mean, be real with us here.
My understanding of that euphemism is uncover his manhood.
Okay, because I had actually noted that it's such a weird thing to uncover
yes.
somebody's feet that
right.
I figured it didn't mean just
right. That's
you wanted to see his feet.
Yeah. Well, that's romantic.
That was a signal
that's
for something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I figured it was like a signal, at least that is intended to show I'm interested in you. I'm available.
Because
then
I'm feeling
the same. He seemed very happy when he woke up.
Right. It's more than his toes.
Okay.
Some of his manly parts.
Okay. Because
uncovered.
You know, the other thing, place my mind went to with that
that's
is there's a lot of this washing of feet.
Yes.
And I thought maybe it could be a thing about cleanliness. Like if she uncovered his feet and they were clean, I don't know. That's one of the things that went into my head.
Mm. Well, and there actually is foot washing that goes on because
yeah.
the dusty
right.
roads,
right.
and that's
right.
a sign
right.
of hospitality.
He says,
right.
uncover his feet and he will tell you what to do next.
Exactly.
But now that you say that, that just totally makes sense. That is like a prelude to intimacy that is actually...
But you know, what I found not just in Ruth, but also in some other books, it was reassuring, even with all the war and bloodshed, you know, where you saw the community recognize when something was good. Like, you know, when people... you know, talked about, you know, sort of praised Ruth for what she was doing
for her
stepmother. And there were other parts like where, you know, like even with David, you know, where it just, you know, I don't know. I have this vision of ancient people and they're barbarians and they're killing and it's a dog eat dog world and no one can, but I mean there's morsels of, you know, humanity you
yes.
see where people actually are like, no, that's not right, or, you know, you need to be honored for taking care of your, you know, so it's that connection with humanity, those pieces
but
of
it just
humanity
didn't happen
that
just often.
Did.
I mean, every time we saw it, saw 10 examples of something bad.
I mean,
yes.
It seems more like everyday life.
Right.
So while we're on Ruth and Naomi.
You said we're going to ask them.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Are you with us online there on the phone?
Yes.
Chime in here. We're just rolling along
yes.
with it. Anything, those of you on the phone that would like to ask or note in particular as we're talking about Ruth?
No, I haven't gotten to Ruth yet. I haven't gotten that far yet.
Okay. Anybody else?
I would like to say this is Jacqueline.
Hey, Jacqueline.
Hi. In the very first verse at the beginning of the chapter of Ruth, where it says, now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled.
Yes.
But there was a famine in the land. And that's what, that's why the family had to leave Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to dwell in the country of Moab because of the famine.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And these were God's people. They were believers of the Most High God, and the people of Moab, you know, they were worshiping idols.
Uh-huh.
And I see in this how God's almighty hand was merciful. And even though it was to Naomi's loss, you know, she lost her husband, she lost both of her sons, but God sent them that way so that Ruth would be saved. And there was Ruth and Orpah Orpah returned to her people and to her God, but Ruth said, I will stay with you, and wherever you go, I will go, and your God will be my God. So, that was that was Ruth's saving grace. And because she did not want to continue to worship idols, and she accepted the God of Israel as her God. Look, and you know, through all of that, of course, came from this lineage. This is where Christ came from.
Uh-huh.
So this is God's almighty hand in this, and it all started because they had to leave Bethlehem, Judah, because of the famine, and go to a land of Moab where they were worshiping idols, and Ruth got saved, and the lineage of Christ began. So it was just very, it was such a blessing just to see how, you know, the lineage starts and,
so,
you know, to see God's handiwork.
So, Deborah?
Jacqueline.
Jacqueline, I'm sorry. So, Jacqueline, you actually saw God's hand maybe even in Ruth from the very beginning with the creation of the famine, because it was, so what you're saying is you see it as kind of a blessing in disguise, because
that
was
the
catalyst.
Because of the famine, that's what drove them from Bethlehem to go to Moab.
Okay.
And Ruth was a Moabite. They might not have encountered her.
And Ruth
had they
was
not
a Moabite woman. Yes.
Very good. Thank you for that. I hadn't thought of it that way. Great stuff. So while we're talking about Ruth, I'd like to pick up on one of Joanna's comments earlier this week about women in general. How this past week's reading has so many strong women. You know, we touched on Ruth and Naomi here, but what other really strong women stuck out to you?
Abigail.
Abigail. And where was Abigail?
She's recent.
She was Nabal's wife. Nabal was a rude, treacherous man, and he wasn't willing to help David and his men.
Oh, right.
And and David had intended, to go and kill him, but Abigail quickly got, you know, putting things together, bread and raisin cakes and all this, and she took them to David.
Is that Jack Crow?
You know, and told him in essence, my husband is a foolish man, but if you would just, you know, have mercy on him because of your maidservant, and don't go and cause bloodshed. And God struck Nabal, and he died, and David then took Abigail as his wife.
Right.
Yes. So,
awesome.
Song vocal woman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah, 1 Samuel 25. So, Abigail, and David takes a number of wives. Was she, and Abigail, and David was not Abigail's first husband.
Nabal was her husband.
Yeah, they even describe her as intelligent, and because it mm-hmm. sounded like her husband was not necessarily treacherous, but and that's in like mad. He just sounded kind of like a foolish guy who just had a temper sometimes, and then just foolishly told them, you know, to go away. Who are you? To David's men, and then when his wife found out, she's, you know, I like that story too. And
what about Deborah?
So do y'all remember who Deborah was?
She was a prophet, wasn't she?
She was a prophet.
And a leader.
And
she was a leader. And that's the first woman I remember having that much power.
Yeah, so that's in Judges, right?
That's 192.
Isn't she the one that pounds the steak?
No.
That's another.
There's a couple of Deborahs.
That's why I like that story, is that it's tricky, because it sort of lures you in when Barak comes to her, and she's also a prophet, too. She's not just a leader.
Jael.
And she says, well, if I go with you, bear in mind that a woman will be, you know, credited for killing the commander, you know?
So
and
you're thinking,
is that why he said, kill me so that...
No. But you're thinking it's because Deborah is going with him. But it's not. It's because later another woman, Jael, kills the commander.
Judges 4.
So it's kind of like
Judges 4?
So it's kind of... You're thinking, oh, yeah, a woman's going to be credited because Deborah's riding with them to go to battle, but another woman winds up killing. So it's almost like she prophesied that this other woman was going to kill.
It was Jael.
Yeah.
Heber's wife picked up a tent peg and a hammer. and went quietly to him. While he lay fast asleep, exhausted, she drove the peg through his temple into the ground, and he died. Judges 4:21. That's one of the more memorable nuggets. Because you can just, it's just so vivid.
Yes.
I can't remember where it was, but this woman knocked something down, and it hit one of the leaders, and he said, well, it's going to go down in history that a woman killed me, so kill me first before I die.
Oh.
Who was that?
Remember that? Wall, right? So up on the wall during battle?
Yeah, I can't remember.
I don't remember.
And in fact, it's referenced later... When they report to David about how they set up Uriah, Bathsheba's husband, that King David's going to wonder why we were so close to the wall, because
Murder was a mess.
And I can't remember that.
I can't remember it was
in Judges 9, I believe. Because it's his young armor bearer. Draw your sword and kill me. Don't let it be said that a woman killed Abimelech.
Yeah, that's it.
Abimelech.
Yeah.
Which page is that?
Judges 9.
198 through 199.
Oh, yeah. Here it is. It's,
that's shameful.
You
kill for a woman.
9, verse 54. Draw your sword and kill me.
Oh, yeah, I even highlighted
that. This is why I saw that Abimelech was dead. And they went home.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. They went home, like that.
Right. Wow, yes.
Right. Yeah, but I think that the next verse is really the bigger story, where it says, you know, the lesson is God repaid the wickedness that Amalek had done to his father by murdering his 70 brothers.
Murdering 70 brothers.
So, yeah, I mean, that happened earlier in the passage. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then Amalek,
Abimelech
got what was coming to him.
Another question. So, chapter 10, how do you pronounce that person's name?
Which one?
Which one? D-O-D-O.
T-O-T-O-L-A.
How do you pronounce it?
T-O-D-O.
D-O-D-O.
Dodo.
Is it Dodo? Okay, I just want to know.
Dodo.
We ought to be pronouncing
it. Yeah, the son of Dodo rose to save Israel.
Dodo, okay.
He had 30 sons that had 30 donkeys. So, sometimes the lessons in all of this violence isn't quite so clear, other than sometimes you just think, oh, it must be violence just for violence. They're always fighting, like you were saying. But this one did seem to have a moral to the story there, with God repaying the wickedness.
Yeah, there were a number of battles in Joshua, and when they say, you know, and Joshua killed everyone and there was no one left, over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It reminded me of the testimony in one of the John Gotti trial, where the guy said, and I met this guy and he did this and so I killed him. And he kept saying it over and over and over again. I mean, but it reminded me of that kind of depravity.
Well, and you know what you're saying there, Kathy, about you know, the people being killed sort of repeatedly and over again. But it occurred to me that the early Hebrews, kept making the same mistakes and pissing God off.
They keep saying they did evil, and then they did evil again, and they did evil, and they keep on doing
worshiping
evil,
worshiping other gods. Taking
over and over.
But there were shorter periods of time where God was mad with them, it seemed.
It wasn't so epic.
7 years. Yeah, it wasn't so epic. 7 years.
And they also hurt God's feelings as well.
Well, really. Yeah.
Well, you know what I was really thinking about? Just think about today. And I think about, like, you know, all of us were here 9/11. And I'm just thinking about the conversations I have with my staff assistant when I tell him, no, really, if you get a package and powder falls out, stay there and you call the phone. And he thinks I'm joking. Mm. And that was just like 13, 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so if you put it in perspective, I mean, just think of it. I mean, it's just people have short memories.
Right.
Yeah. But people, after, like, you know, one or two decades, people forget, or even if they don't forget, they
don't think it can happen to them also.
Yeah, they don't think it can happen to them.
So, yeah, picking up on that point, you know, they forget, but you'd think you'd be able to remember which god you're worshiping.
For real. And they've done so much for you.
They would just pick them up and, oh, well, here's Baal over here in Moloch, and there's an Amorish pole. I don't know what was done around the Amorish pole, but that kept pissing God off. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as in the very first reading, and when we did Exodus and the commandments, so what was God's first commandment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do not worship any idols.
You will not. You put no
false gods before me.
And I mean, to me, like growing up, when we learned the Ten Commandments, you think, "Oh, that's a gimme." You know, I got that. Like there are others around. Here, you see that there actually seem to be some God shopping.
Yeah, competition
going on, and so. As I read the Bible, it occurred to me why God maybe made that the first commandment.
Because he figured they would do
it. It was a tough one to keep, apparently.
Well, it might have also been a very different one to keep from what what history had presented. I mean, most before, it was polytheism as opposed to monotheism.
Yes.
So this was a real change.
So you're saying maybe it was okay. The people at that time would think it was okay. I have my Hebrew God, but I'll also have some gods on the side.
Yeah, possibly. Or it was just such a difficult concept.
To only have one God.
To only have one. Right.
I want to get to Canute over here.
Sorry.
As you said that, yeah, and it's seemingly difficult to only have one wife as well, so maybe...
Right.
More than one wife.
I think the other push maybe is, so, and that's been constant, they have different cultural environment. So, and if you've ever lived in a different cultural environment, you try to adapt. I mean, that's every foreigner will tell you. Or if you go somewhere and you try to blend in, you try to adapt to the culture. So it's actually, it takes extra effort to do something else. Your natural position would be, I follow the customs of whoever I live with. And so to kind of, I think that makes it also difficult for them to kind of follow that concept because everybody around them does something else. And
there's as Romans do.
Yeah. Right, but there's also a forgiveness because the Romans aren't expect you to get it right. Right, the Romans aren't going to expect you to do everything like they do because you're not one of us. And we're talking about 12 disparate tribes, 12 very different tribes. And I also think, you know, Moses had all these really hard laws that he was, you had to, this sacrifice, and you got to wear this, and you got to, it may have been easier just to say, you know what, I got to go back to what I was doing for a minute. Just to not have to, you know, clean, unclean. I just want to go over here for a minute.
But there's a comment in Deuteronomy from Moses that says to the people, look, this is not like hearsay. You were actually here and seeing all of these miracles.
Right.
And it's pretty much saying, what's wrong with you?
Well,
you've actually seen it. It's not like you've heard about it.
Right.
You saw this. So what's the problem?
And it was their downfall,
that's
right?
That's what I don't understand.
Those people.
But I don't think it's as basic as, like, all of these rules, because my impression of what the other peoples were doing was just as complicated. I mean, if you believed in Molech, you were sacrificing your sons and daughters. You know, you had obligations to your gods. I didn't sound like the other people were just sitting at home and they could take it easy and do nothing. They were having all of these practices themselves with sacrifices and other things to their God. So I think, I mean, it's almost like maybe God, in a way, because they were surrounded by these people, where it's kind of like, okay, let me focus your energy on the one God. If you're going to be doing sacrifices, you're going to be doing sacrifices to the one God. Because otherwise, you're going to wind up even sacrificing your own children to Molech.
It's better to sacrifice a sheep than your own children.
I was curious, Joanna, just picking up where you were, I was curious if this came up last week when you were talking about the sacrificing of all the animals and the blood sacrifices
and the wheat, the grain, and so on.
And so, and Joanna, what you were saying about some of these other gods, you sacrificed your son. It occurred to me, and I don't know if anybody else thought of this, but these sacrifices might have been a common methodology that was used with the other Canaanite religions of that time, where people were making sacrifices to gods.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Hebrews just incorporated a little blood sacrifice or oat or goat or whatever of their own. And I don't want to say maybe that made it more of a palatable selling point, because it didn't seem so weird if we also have sacrifices. It seemed like something that people of that
something that God told them to do? He didn't tell them to do that?
Yes, and very specific too.
Okay.
But also I wonder, you know, how much is actually God's direct instruction
and
how much is the author's
and the writer
yeah
the time and the society and the period.
Yeah, I mean, that's custom and receiving the message are going to blend together.
Back to folks on the phone. Are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, so let me throw it back out. What thoughts do you have on the things that we were just talking about? Anything to add?
No, not really.
How about strong women?
The thing that I keep thinking about is, I know Israel, God favored those people, but I guess I'm just wondering why he didn't favor the other people.
Why did he pick the Hebrews?
He gave them chances after chances after chances.
Yes.
Whenever somebody messed up, he just put somebody else in charge. But the rest of the people in the world, it just seemed like they were just spending for themselves.
They got all
right.
Too.
Right. Is that Jacqueline?
No, that was Danita.
Hey, Danita. That's a great point. You know, I often thought that myself too. But from the very beginning, God sort of picked Abraham, and they did the circumcision thing, and so that separated out his people. But
the special ones.
But then, you know, when you got to Sodom and Gomorrah and Lot and his wife, and then some of God's chosen people. I'm thinking of Lot specifically. Became split off, you know. Jacob and his folks go into Egypt, but then some of Lot, and wasn't he also chosen? But then when Moses brings him back out of Egypt, Lot's people somehow are no longer part of the. Am I missing something there? Have I got it right? So back to Danita, your point. It is sort of mysterious how some of the Hebrew tribe God seems to stick with, and then others seem to be forgotten and go by the wayside.
Well, actually, when they were wandering in the wilderness, I forget which ones, but God was very specific, like, for instance, about particular peoples, like, because they were Esau's descendants, and I think one of them was Lot's descendants. That no, you're not getting their land because God was protecting them in essence as well.
But he was still part of the tribe of Abraham. I mean, he was still.
Well, it was. I mean, my impression is that the tribe of Israel is Israel Jacob. So it's basically the question is why was Jacob chosen? It actually really wasn't. It was the promise to Abraham, but it was Jacob's offspring that sort of defined the universe of.
Yes. Yeah, and I had real problems with that whole story that you're talking about. I know it was covered previous, probably the first week. I had a real problem with that, with God seeming to reward Jacob, who was duplicitous, and he was. He pulled a trick, and he seemed to get rewarded for it. And I just thought
he did all kinds of things. His brothers, his relatives.
Yeah.
Right. Great question.
I had real issue with that, on why God would then reward Jacob when he stole his brother's birthright.
Right.
Well, maybe it wasn't about rewarding Jacob. Maybe it was about the people. And sometimes we need one person to get to other people. Just thinking outside the box.
Okay.
Can you say more? I'm not sure.
Sometimes God, today is the 5th year anniversary of my uncle passing. Today has been a very tough day for me. And I made a phone call today to someone else that I hadn't spoken to in a while. And I realized once I got off the phone with her that God went around me through her to help me. Mm-hmm. Because he knows and he can see that I'm having a hard day today. So in that story, I'm thinking about a lot of people that we've been reading about. And I keep trying to figure out, why was this person chosen? Why is he choosing
this person over this person. And the, sometimes the only thing I can come back to is I find that our God uses people to get to other people.
Oh, absolutely. That's true.
So that's why I said thinking outside okay. the box a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't really about him. It was about the people within him, from him, a part of him, that he needed to get through. So he used him as his gateway to kind of do his other work, because it kind of trickles off. The things that we do sometimes, some of the stories are trickling off from other people. And not to say that that's the right answer.
Yeah.
But it could be.
And you know, in Judges, they said that the Lord picked these people to be judges, but they weren't necessarily such great people.
Exactly.
But they did what he wanted them to do. They followed his orders, but they weren't necessarily great people, and they didn't always do the right thing.
Yeah, and some of that fallibility, I think, is relatable. When you're, go ahead. Who's on the phone? Go ahead.
I think what I'm thinking of is, say, for instance, overall, like now we have preachers, you know, of different denominations, which go out, and everybody, I think, have a chance to be saved or hear the word. Where it seemed like back then, only the chosen people had that honor.
Right.
And we talked a little bit last week about these being oral stories and the fallibility of people. You know, hearing the fallibility of someone within an oral story lets you identify with that. Otherwise, they're way up on a pedestal and you can never hope to be that good, that pure, that perfect. A lot of the chosen people that we're seeing that God showed favor to, they did some naughty things.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I hate to say this, but for some reason I keep thinking about Hitler. And I don't know if that makes sense or not. It might sound like be a bad thing to say, but the word chosen people brings that to my mind.
Exclusive.
Well, it's a good motivator, right? I want to be one of the chosen. I want to follow the chosen. I want to be with the chosen one.
And you might not ever be able to be a chosen one.
Absolutely.
Also.
Well, you know, I got reassurance with the fact that many of the people chosen were not perfect. And it seemed like God would go out of the way to pick people that other people weren't. Like, remember how they were picking Saul and then David. I mean, David was out in the field. I mean, like, if they come.
Right? Was that Jesse's son?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he went through what, 11 sons?
Yes.
He was like, no. Don't you have another son? Yeah. Down there at the end.
Yes.
You're the one. And in your mind, you're thinking,
why him? And then, or even remember back at Moses. Moses clearly had an issue with speaking in front of people. And he's like, why did you? I can't be a spokesperson. I can't speak well. Okay, fine. You know, take your brother. But it's just, and that to me is very refreshing, because it tells me that, you know, it's like you don't have to be perfect.
Your comment down here.
Yes.
Well, it's just the general theme that we're circling around here relates to what we were talking about earlier with Ruth, and whether Ruth was highlighted in the Old Testament to prepare for the genealogy at the beginning of Matthew. There's an old saying in talking about this whole idea, God writes crooked with straight lines. And it's, we don't understand actually what's going on, but it's continuing on.
Wonderful. Great stuff. So, and I want to come back. Thank you. I want to come back to Cassandra and Joanna were saying about God sometimes picking, blessing somebody like Saul, and then realizing that Saul, no, he isn't so great, and then picking someone else like David. I mean, so. What I kind of thought out of that is even God can make mistakes sometimes. You were talking about your uncle, and sometimes people, things happen, and sometimes I say to myself, you know, that wasn't meant to be, it wasn't his time or her time, and it must have been a mistake. And you see that God has made some mistakes. I took it that
God recognized that people had shortcomings, mm-hmm. and that he could work through that.
Okay.
Like Moses, I took that, you know, that even though he couldn't talk, he couldn't speak that well, that God was saying, that's okay, because we're going to do it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt with Saul just did it too many times.
Yes.
So, okay, I'm done.
Yeah. We're moving on from here.
Yeah.
And also, in my experience, people feel safer and believe people that had been where they've been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like these self-help groups, people that are in it are people that have the same issues, and they help each other because they recognize that these people have been where they are. And so they believe that they can help them.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Or perhaps where we focus on our weaknesses or our inabilities, God sees something else. And like in Moses, I mean, you know, he stayed consistently faithful to God, although there was that one little blip where he with the rock, and so he pays the ultimate price. But
yes,
yeah.
I would have said to God,
one
time, can you just not do this again? Because I really don't want to come back.
Time and time again. And even though, you know, he felt like he had a weakness, God saw that he had a greater strength.
Right.
I tend to think of it that way, that there's strengths and weaknesses in everyone, and sometimes the weaknesses overcome.
Yeah.
God sees the strength, and you may disappoint God because you allow the weakness to overcome, as opposed to working off this what he sees as the strength.
Can I go to Canoe?
On the same disappoint, it kind of makes you see God as a father figure. And, you know, they're children, and he has hopes in them. You know, and he puts his hopes in the kids that they will do right and that they will do what he says. And kids disappoint, you know, so, and sometimes he regrets that he had put his hopes in them, and he says, you know, when he regrets that he made Saul king. So I wouldn't even say it is a mistake as much as I assume the best of you.
Okay.
You can only disappoint me, and
very
often they do.
Okay.
First of all, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, and I'll let you succeed if you do what I say.
Right.
Well, it's the human condition.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It seemed like he wanted Samuel to just get over it. I mean, did anyone else get that feeling from him? Like, at the very end, I can't remember exactly which verse. When he was talking to Samuel, was still kind of bothered about Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically felt like God was like, okay, get over it. I could be wrong. I think it's somewhere the point where he was like, decision, but you know, Samuel's sitting over there like, oh my gosh, duh, I made a bad decision. And I just kind of felt like God came in there like, man, look, let's go.
You wallowed in it enough.
So it's like he got over it. But poor Samuel was sitting there like, oh my gosh, you know, Saul. So, I mean, I felt like, yeah, you're forgiving God, but you are not playing. Like, your feelings are kind of quick, and maybe I'm wrong, but I kind of feel like sometimes he's long, and then sometimes he's very quick and short.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Move on.
That kind of move on thing. So, I don't know. I'm a little torn between what's going on, because there's been a lot of killing going on. So.
Yeah.
Can I just ask a question? Did anyone else feel like Saul really was struggling, I don't know, with mental health issues? And I don't say that to be a joke, but it just seemed like his behavior just seemed so bizarre. Like where David, he'll pursue David, and then David will say, you know, what have I done to you? It's like, oh, is that you, my son? And it was almost like when they talked about when David would play the music for him, that would calm him.
Mm.
It was almost like he was really struggling, and in a weird way, God did not abandon Saul, because David had many times where he could have killed Saul, and David was like, I cannot kill
he's been anointed.
And it was almost like God, like there was still, it was like Saul was struggling with something. And it was clear he could not lead anymore. But he still had some level of protection, even through David, who he was trying to kill.
It's an interesting insight. I saw Saul as very impetuous and having fits of jealousy over David.
Yeah, the song kept setting him off.
Yeah. Very good. One of the things I wanted to get to before our time ran out was one of my all-time favorite Bible stories. And nobody's brought it up yet.
David and Goliath.
We haven't talked about David and Goliath. I was thinking Samson and Delilah.
One of my favorites.
We were strong women, and we didn't get to her.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
Samson wasn't painted in the best light either.
Well, she was kind of a bad girl, though.
She was.
She was a bad girl.
We're talking about good girls.
Quick, the Philistines are coming. Yeah. Don't tell me your weakness. Yeah. Quick, the Philistines are coming. Don't tell her your weakness.
I don't think he really believed. I got the impression he really did not really understand where his strength came
was.
From. Because I think he knew she was tricking him. And, you know, the fact that it wasn't like the hair was a symbol, because we read earlier about the Nazarite, is that they dedicate, so he was dedicated by birth, by his mother, not his father.
And
his
told him.
Yes.
She told him.
So I didn't understand that, but then this time when I read it, I'm thinking, he's not that stupid. I think he really did not appreciate where his strength came from.
So, let me, on that note, Joanne, let me throw it out to the folks on the phone. Are you still with us?
Yes.
Samson and Delilah? Joanna says that that Samson really didn't get that the power of his hair was really...
Because his hair represented the vow that he's dedicated to God. So I think it went deeper than that. I don't think it was magical, suddenly his hair gives him magic. I think it was the I don't think he really appreciated or understood the power in the vow that was symbolized, you know, by growing his hair, of his dedication to God.
16 verse 17.
Taking that a step further, he got his power back when his hair started growing back after she cut it off, and then he pushed down the walls of the whatever it was. So let me ask this: What do you see as the moral of that story of Samson and Delilah? Is it, you know, listen to God and don't cut your hair?
With temptations.
With temptation.
Playing with temptations. That's what I think it has to do with.
Okay.
Flesh.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go Toni Morrison. When someone shows you who they are, believe them.
Right.
Yeah, but it's so much fun.
I mean,
it's so tempting, exciting.
Yeah. Knut, I know you've got something on your mind.
No, actually, but just to support what you said on not knowing where his real strength came from, in 116, 20, it says, but he did not know that the Lord had left him. That was after his hair was cut. So it's actually not the hair itself, it's the strength of the Lord. It's just a symbol of his true source of strength.
Right.
Because whenever I heard the story before, I found it kind of weird that the strength should be in the hair. And without understanding the Nazarite tradition, I wouldn't have understood this either. But it makes much more sense now. Mm-hmm.
That God...
It's not the hair.
Right. But when the hair was gone...
He could have worn a wig and it wouldn't have helped him.
So yeah, I guess it's...
At the beginning, I thought he was playing with her. But now that Joanne said that, I think he wasn't sure either, you know, because he kept telling her different things, and then the people would try it and it wouldn't work. So that kind of makes sense. And he really didn't know, because when he told her, it didn't seem like he was playing with her or just, you know, lying.
Right.
I think he was throwing out stuff.
Right.
And he just happened to hit it on that last one, so.
But, yeah, I just.
I think that one more time a woman was used to be deceitful, conniving, and I mean that's what maybe my understanding of what I read about all the women up until Delilah, they were all very deceitful. I mean, and except for I think Ruth was the only one to me that seemed like she was not.
She was
kind of like pure at heart.
And there was Sarah.
They were playing.
Interesting.
And they promised Delilah with shekels or shickles, so many shekels.
Yes.
Right.
Gold.
Right. Well, yes.
Find out what Samson's strength came from. But see, Samson was interested in one thing and one thing only. He wanted to be with her.
Right.
Yeah. Basically, and it seemed like to me because he was thinking with his male part,
right,
and not with his
feet.
And yeah, no, I don't know if that was Danita.
It was Ann.
And can I pick up with that thought? Because that was one of the lessons I took from Samson and Delilah, what you were saying about how Samson wanted to be with Delilah so much, and she was a Philistine. And God, again and again and again, has these admonitions against, you know, don't be with those idol-worshipping other people, whether the Philistines, these other Canaanites or the Philistines. Or and Samson, he was blessed. And he still went ahead. That's one of the things I took from the Samson and Delilah story is
forbidden fruit.
You didn't listen to me, and as you said, Anne, thinking with your other parts, and you didn't stay with your people, and you went after these folks I told you not to be with. To this day, I know a lot of I grew up in a Jewish neighborhood, and a lot of my Jewish friends, their mothers to this day are very, you know, it's very important for them to carry on their tradition and
married Jewish women,
and you see it here, where they really wanted, because it was important for carrying on the religion. And so that's one of the things I took from Samson and Delilah. Good. So what have we not? What's on your mind here that we haven't kind of hit some of the highlights? What else is on your mind?
Why do you have to be naked to prophecy?
Why do you have to be naked to prophecy? Got what?
There was a story where you either undressed or you had to, and then you prophesied. I don't know.
I don't remember that one.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah. It was Saul.
Yeah. In Saul somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
Random, I know, but
yeah. Random thought. How about those of you on the phone again? Other things that were on your mind from this week's reading?
I'm okay with it. I'm okay.
Okay.
This is Wendy. This is Jacqueline again. I just like to tie. I mean, I've been listening to the conversation about Samson and Delilah and about. You know, why does God choose who he chooses? Jacob was a trickster. Then you went back to the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And I just see a common tie going there. Because that, you know, the first commandment, of course, that is first and foremost. And when, yes, Jacob was a trickster, and he stole his brother's birthright, but, you know, he stole the brother's birthright because Jacob knew the importance, and he treasured it and appreciated it, even though he got it through trickery with the help of his mother. But he wanted it, and he knew the worth of it, where Esau took it very lightly.
and he didn't treasure it, you know. And God looks at the heart, and all those prophets and all of our biblical ancestors, none of them were perfect. None of us are ever going to be perfect, but God has a purpose for each of us, and whatever his purpose is for us, we are still in this human flesh. We were conceived in sin. We were born in sin. But when God sees that there's something in any of us that he can use in spite of our sinful nature, and that's when he's going to rise us up and use us, you know. And let's just look at Martin Luther King. I don't know how true all these things is about how he, you know, ran after women and he had this woman and that woman or whatever. He was unfaithful to his wife and he did a lot of things, you know, that were not God-like, but God truly had a purpose for his life and how he used him powerfully in spite of his weakness, in spite of him thinking with his man part sometimes over the big head.
Sure.
So, and just, you know, just trying to, you know, I just see once again a common tie in all of that. And then speaking of Samson did not appreciate and he did not hold dear to the calling that God had of him, and his mother and father taught him and told him, and he just turned and did what Samson wanted to do. Samson was full of pride. Samson was a haughty man, and he knew the strength that he had, and he knew that the strength came from God. But it was like, I'm going to do what I want to do, and, you know, and I'll pay the price later. Well, he did pay the price later. But when his hair started growing back, you know, it was not the hair. That was when Samson humbled his heart to the Lord, and then God's spirit returned to him, and that's when he got his strength back. So I just see a common tie in all of this. Once we humble our hearts and in spite of our own sinful human weaknesses, when God sees something in us and when God has a purpose for us, he's going to use us, and his purpose and his will is going to be accomplished in spite of us.
Awesome.
Yeah, I agree with you. That
well, yeah, on that note, that almost the perfect ending, I see that we're at our anointed time, past the anointed hour. Could we close out? Yeah.
Someone's
Excuse me, I couldn't hear a thing that was said.
Yeah, no. We're trying to. Someone's trying to leave, and their car is in the way. So we were just.
My car.
Oh, okay. It's Robin's. Okay.
So right, we're going to close out.
Yeah.
We're going to close out, and we'll close out with a prayer.
Okay.
You got it?
Okay. God, thank you for bringing us all together tonight. Thank you for sharing your words with us. Thank you for bringing everyone here safely. And we thank you, God, for watching over all of us as we return home tonight. In your name, amen.
Amen.
Thank you for joining us as we read our way through the Bible in 90 days. Please visit us online at mccdc.com.